I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 433. Silent Hills, the cake is a lie!
Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hello.
Welcome back.
I know, it's been forever. It feels like forever, I should
say. It's only been a week. So much stuff has happened, Panda. Like,
really?
It was like a crazy week for us to not do a podcast.
Of course. I go away and everyone decides they're going to drop news.
Everybody's going to like delay games.
Or cancel games.
Cancel games.
Or announce games.
Or announce DLC because people are like, where the fuck's the DLC? And when is it? And what is it? Because like really, like it was a crazy week. Crazy. But I'm so glad you're back, because we have a bunch of things to talk about. I have anime to talk about. I have game stuff to talk about. Guess what? I'm going to talk about Destiny stuff. I told myself I wasn't going to do it, but...
I don't know why you tell yourself you're not going to talk about Destiny, because the minute you say, I'm not going to talk about it, you're like, well, while I'm on the subject, and then you completely talk about the thing, you
well,
don't.
Well, because, like, here's the thing. I was trying really hard to not overhype the next DLC, House of Wolves, right?
Right.
So hard. But the problem was that the Bungie team started doing a bunch of live streams about what's coming in House of Wolves.
Damn it, Bungie. And
I got all excited, and then I can't contain my excite.
So you're not disappointed?
I am not disappointed. I am excited.
Okay.
So talk
about it, because I have fallen so far off of the Destiny tree.
I know. I got to get you back on the Destiny chain. And here's the thing, Panda. Like, no bullshit. I think this DLC will actually get you back on the train.
I don't know. Bloodborne really has its
no,
hands
blood,
on...
No, Bloodborne is like...
Abbey, so
like,
you're going to have a fight on your hands.
So, like, here's the thing. Bloodborne, I know, has its grip on you. But a bunch of the things that were our major gripes about Destiny initially when it rolled out... are almost all getting addressed in House of Wolves.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Big time. So the matchmaking's getting addressed. The upgrade system will be addressed. The speaker will now... Like, the big thing for me is that the speaker will now let you do materials exchange. So he's not just going to be a bunch of legendary garb that people say has an effect on how... RNGesus treats you, and other people are like, no, it's just strictly cosmetic. And you're like, then why does it cost all those damn motes of light, which are a very elusive item for you to capture? It makes no sense. They obviously have to have some kind of impact, and they change the inventory regularly, so there's got to be some kind of reason. Because I never understood why the speaker just had these legendary items that cost you 27 motes of light. Because it's not easy to generate motes of light, right? So,
well, I have so many fucking motes of light.
It's because you don't buy a lot of legendary items from the speaker. Because
no,
think about
it. I bought one thing once.
Think about it. What other thing can you buy with motes of light in the game? Don't hurt yourself. Nothing. There's no other item that you buy with motes of light in the game,
okay,
except
so then,
for items from the
so
speaker.
So now what's going to happen? So now these things will have a significant shift in what...
Well, the speaker is now going to let you do materials exchange. So you'll be able...
Ooh!
So you'll be... No, here's the big deal about that, though. So you'll be able to go in with, let's say, oh, I don't know, you've run a bunch of raids, and all you keep getting is fucking radiant energy, and what you need is goddamn shards.
Can you now change your...
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. You can go to the speaker and you can exchange
that ability too, but only when you were like ranked four or five with her.
Well, you could buy Radiant Energy or you could buy Shards.
So it wasn't a straight buy. It was a conversion. You could convert five energies to a shard. Shard.
Now you have a whole bunch of other ones that you can do. So there's pretty much all of the materials that are in the game you can exchange via the speaker. Okay. So if you've run a bunch of raids, and let's say, oh, I don't know, you've pretty much maxed out all of your armor, but not so much your weapons. Now you can do materials exchange so that you can bang out those weapon upgrades easily.
You said bang.
I did. Two, the upgrade path for your weapons. Completely fixed. So now it's not like, oh, I've got to have the weapon and I got to have 7 grand in money and I need to exchange it and it's going to reset all my progress. So I'm going to get the new weapon that can do 331 damage, but it'll be at zero and I have to rebuild it. Nope. When you exchange a weapon, which would all be a weapons exchange and I forget what it's called now, but you have to have an item and the weapon, and you can exchange it for the more powerful one, the upgrade, it will keep your current progress. So if you've maxed out, let's say, oh, I don't know, your icebreaker to 50%, when you change it in for the more powerful one, it'll be at that 50% point.
Ooh, okay.
Yay! So you'll feel like a total fucking loser, and you're like, well, fuck it. No, the weapon I have is like half power, so I don't really need it. So that's a good thing. Plus, there are going to be new weapons. And there's going to be the ability to actually use the gunsmith to smith your weapons. And I think this is going to be a neat thing. So you'll be able to take some of your legendary and exotic weapons over to the gunsmith. And for a free and a material item, you could basically have the gunsmith respec your weapon. So let's say that you have a shit ton of void damage sniper rifles. And you don't need 6 void damage sniper rifles. You want a sniper rifle that does some goddamn fire damage. True. You go to the smith and say, hey, instead of trying to get rid of all those void weapons and hope through RNGesus you get a fire one, you can have the gunsmith spec your weapon. It's a random draw how it draws it. But when he smiths your weapon, it can add different perks and bonuses to your weapon and change the overall damage that it does. So the gunsmith actually will smith things now.
Oh no, the gunsmith actually doing his job.
As opposed to just selling you bullets. Hooray.
Hooray.
At a ridiculous price, by the way.
Of course, because, you know, supply and effing demand, bro.
Yep. Also, the Reef is going to be a social hub, so now you'll have 2 social hubs that you can go to, either Earth or the Reef, so there'll be
I'm sorry. No.
Denote a little bit of sarcasm.
Here is my issue with that, okay? Okay, great. We now have 2 hubs where people can just hang out and buy the same stuff that's on the initial hub.
Nope. Different stuff on different hubs.
All right. Anyway, going back to it, I thought people weren't supposed to be hanging out at the Reef because the Awoken are all like, no, get the fuck out of our space or we're going to shoot you.
See, that's the whole thing about the DLC. That's how they were, but the Fallen basically rebel against the Queen. So remember that favor that she mentioned in that mission where like, hey, if something pops off, I expect you to return the favor? Well, shit pops off. And the Awoken are like, hey, we need some help because the Fallen have fucking betrayed us. And we might be in a little bit over our heads. So there are...
What I never understood about that whole interaction that you have when you first encounter the Reef. Like, if you are an Awoken Guardian, you would think that they wouldn't be as cold to you, or I always thought...
Yeah, except it's just pre-written. Like, nobody had that thought. I agree with you. Like, if you're Awoken, and I'm Awoken, and I roll up to you, you should be, like, at least a little bit less douchey to me. I mean...
Like, not by much. Like, I'm saying, like, even just a different dialogue.
Yep, I agree. I don't think that anybody kind of...
Which, it made no sense to me.
Thought that through.
They're just like, you know, you're an outsider. I'm like, bitch, I'm an Awoken.
I'm an Awoken, too. What the hell?
Like, for all you know, I'm royalty.
I could be your cousin. You don't know.
Your cousin. Game of Thrones, bitch. Cacao. I'm the new queen.
Red wedding.
Not even. I don't need to get married to kill people. I just go up there and I don't even want to get started.
All right. That's not, because that would be another podcast. It will be an hour in and go, shit, we're supposed to talk about video games and anime.
So I'm going to hold my tongue.
But Thrones, though. So the new DLC. Dinkles, though.
I loved that skip from Key and Peele.
Such a good one. All right. Anyway, you know, and then, of course, there's new things on the social hub. So the social hubs are also getting a little bit more social. They are turning on the feature that lets you choose whether or not you want your helmet on when you're in social hubs.
Oh, nice. So now people can look at your face.
Right. Well, they can see your face now, but if you want
to
show off your...
not to show your face.
Right. Well, I mean, because one of the things that I think people like to do is, like, they like to show off their gear, like, especially when you have gotten new stuff through raids or whatever. You like to go into the social hub when you're getting new bounties and things like that. If you're in a party or whatever, be like, yo, I got that blah, blah, blah helmet. Like, check it out. And the only way people have been able to check it out before is that they have to inspect you, which is a couple of clicks. So it's cool, I think, for some people if, you know, they want to just roll around in their helmet all the time. They now have the option. So, you know, that's a nice little addition. Because now I can be like, yo, let me throw on my helmet. Check it out. Whooping! And then you could just look at me. Which I think is cool, as opposed to inspecting players. Because I don't like being in the menus unless I really have to be in the menus. So they're also changing the rate at which legendary and exotic weapons drop in the weekly, in the nightly, and in raids. Because they realized, hey, we tell you to go into these really tough situations that we keep making OP, and then we give you some coins. That's kind of a douchey move. And we've heard
I can't say anything, because the last two times that several months ago when I was doing Crota, and I've been doing Crota normal. I haven't even tried. I'm not geared enough to do Crota hard yet.
Right.
Anyway, but I mean, every time that I've gone in and we've defeated Crota, I've always walked away with something really good, like the rocket launcher that is something of Crota's. I have that, and I got
the Song of Eriut.
Yeah. And like, I think somebody at the very end, after the loot drops happened, somebody moved and then somebody got the Hawk Moon. And we're like, what the fuck? What was that? And he was just like, yeah, I got the Hawk Moon. I was like, no.
Yeah, I have not gotten the Hawk Moon out of Crota. I've done Crota on hard and I've done Crota on normal. I've gotten the machine gun twice. I got on all of my characters the fusion rifle, and then on my last hard run with Crota, I got the pulse rifle that you can use as a primary weapon.
Ooh, nicey nice.
Yeah, so I'm working on building that guy up right now on my hunter. So basically, my hunter is pretty OP at this point, which is nice. However, my poor Titan and I don't think I can warlock anymore. It's been such a long time since I've warlocked. I think I would fail. I need to, like, run a bunch of sprites with my warlock. But
I made a hunter. She's level 2. She hasn't done anything. And my main is not even 31 yet, I don't think. I can't remember.
Didn't you get 1 to 32?
I only have one, so no, I don't have a 32 yet.
Oh.
So.
Because I remember
I stopped playing during that grind.
Ah. Sure. Yeah.
I don't dislike Destiny, and I've just fallen out of sync with everything else that's been, you know, happening.
Look, there's been a lot of really good games that have come
our
way.
And I still haven't played The Order 1886
yet. Yeah, you need to borrow my Order. The Order, I think, for you will probably be, especially since you've been in Bloodborne land, you will probably burn through The Order in under 8 hours.
You give me that much credit, but I have not made the progress that you think I've made in Bloodborne.
You've made the only progress that I've made in Bloodborne, so... give yourself
cut, and here's where your blood pool is. Good luck.
Yep. And I was like, I don't even know where you are. I don't know where my blood pool is. That's not gonna happen. So there you have it. Yay.
There's been some really interesting fan theories about, because that's the great thing about From Software and their games, is that they leave stuff so absolutely vague with no explanation of the world. And, like, they pretty much just hope that whatever you fall into, you're going to speculate on your own and find that entertaining. And not everybody is, you know, really into that. But
no, I like stories that lead me around by the nose. Like, tell me a story, make me part of the story.
So am I. You know, I'm a big fan of narrative, but every once in a while, I like to exercise my brain, and I like to, you know, try to think ahead a few steps just to keep, you know, the brain functioning and, like, the sharp point sharp and the blunt point.
That's what I liked about Beyond Two Souls.
Right, and I think we're actually getting one very similar to that. There was a leaflet inside of Bloodborne that I have here at my house. It's just like... Yeah, and I'm going to send you a screenshot after the show. I was like, Ninja needs to see this. But anyway, sometimes, like I said, with a narrative, sometimes I don't mind creating my own story. And I mean, I think some people through, depending on what type of game it is, like if it's your own adventure or you get to make your own character, you start to build your own narrative, which is what draws you back into wanting to replay things over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I mean... Dragon Souls, Demon Souls, you know, they have always been very open about, we're going to give you this much information, and then hopefully if you're reading things that you find, you know, like the collectibles and stuff that have some narrative on there, and like you can build the story up on your own. But there have been some very interesting fan theories about what's going on in Bloodborne. Now, mind you, at this stage, I'm not even 10% into the game.
I'm not even 1% into the game.
Like, I've beat the first two bosses in the first area. I'm now in the second area.
Go you!
The first one I did all by myself. The second one I had to use my summoning bell and get someone in to help me. And... like, the sad thing about it is that you don't get to communicate with people when you opt up. It's kind of like Journey in that sense where, you know, you just get somebody in your game. And, I mean, like, there are emotions, like, there are gestures that your character can do. But you can't be like, hey, Tom, gas can's over here. Go punch him in the face. Like, there's no direct communication.
Gotcha.
So you're just hoping that you get somebody who, one, hears your bell, two, answers it, and three, knows the fuck what to do. Because you can't give directive. And I had a great guy who came in. I think he was probably at least another two levels higher than me. And he really kind of, he took it to that boss's face. And like, I was like, I didn't even need to be here. But it doesn't matter because it got done. And, but anyway, going back to the fan theory before, cause I'm going to take over a little bit because I haven't talked much. Forever.
Hey, you're the one who went on vacation. I did not tell you to go on vacation.
It was great, and it was wonderful, and I'm glad that I did it. I just wish there weren't snow, but I went to the White Mountains, so clearly it's white.
It's white for a reason, and it's not blow.
Spring had not sprung when we went, but it was still a really good time. But the fan theory that I was pointed to, because obviously you use blood. You know, blood echoes to buy your stuff, and, you know, what's the whole point of this whole blood thing, and, you know, the bloodstones that you have and stuff like that, when you really kind of look at them, they look kind of like clots. Everyone's really kind of hankering for this blood because it has healing properties. And at one point, you start saving people who have not been turned during the hunt, people who are not very bestial but are still relatively sane. I'm using air quotes when I say relatively sane as opposed to actually sane. And at one point, you get a chance to send people to either this clinic or to this church. And, I mean, they both sound like they're good places, but this is Bloodborne, so clearly one of them is not. I'm not going to divulge which one it is because I do know which one is not the best place to go. But that doesn't matter. But when you bring them to a certain place, they will start, the people you save, some of them will offer you vials of blood that will help your character, like, boost certain stats and stuff like that, which is beneficial if you do it. And from what people are speculating, because after a certain point in the game where the more information has been given about what's actually going down, you actually find out that at one point certain characters, female characters, all of a sudden become pregnant. And at that point, they are no longer, if you've managed to save them, they no longer give you this special blood anymore. And you know, just the base, the punchline of all this, and that's a great segue for me, punchline of this is that people are speculating that the blood that is being used for all this special stuff is menstrual blood, because everyone who does give you blood is female. And after certain points of the height of the moon, they won't give you blood anymore. And once they become pregnant, they won't give you blood anymore. And the stones, like I said, kind of look like menstrual clots. And it's kind of gross. But also at the same time, some cultures will use menstrual blood in medical practice for its healing properties. So, I mean, like, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence to that, but nothing has obviously been stated in the real. But, yeah, so bloodborne, periods, women.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. but I really liked that. And, I mean, like, communities have been, like, trying to expand on it more and more. And, well, at first I was kind of like, ew. But then I was kind of like, okay, I could buy this a little
first
bit.
First I was all, ew. But then I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh. And then I was like, thinking
like, a lot of these people who are putting all this stuff together, I'm like, here are all these dudes. Like, huh, yeah, I'm going to take all this blood. I'm going to stab people and take their blood. And, what? Ew, vagina juice, gross.
Oh, my God, don't say it like that.
Like, I'm imagining all these bros like, I can't even play this game no more, man. Like, come on. Now I, like, look at my sister in this whole new light. Like,
no, stop.
I imagine all this horrible stuff because I'm a horrible person.
But well, when you say it like that, even I have the reaction. And I have ovaries.
Me too.
Ew.
And I was like, is this like their way of like empowerment to women?
No, like, because here's the thing.
Like no. There were all this other stuff. Because I was like, you know, if you're a female hunter, can't you just, you know, shove your hand up there?
Stop.
Anyway,
I'm interrupting because here's the thing.
No, I'm all done. I'm all done with that bloodborne tangent.
Well, I'm not done with it.
Okay.
Thank you. No.
Do you need to keep on?
No. No.
Plug it up.
No. Here's the thing. I don't think that it is like an overt feminist type thing. Stop it. I know. I don't think that it's overtly feminist or it's anyone trying to make a statement. I think that if you look at historically what From has always done, so they've always looked and pulled some big elements for their games from factual history. Not that the games themselves are factual history and run factual history, but they pull from history to be inspired for their things. So
material and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's probably just a great source material thing. They didn't set out to be like, all right, so we're going to make a game and we're going to make bros basically play with menstrual fluid. They're not going to know it though. We're not going to ever like,
we're never going to be like, hey, by the way, this is vagina blood.
Exactly. We're not going to tell them that, but we'll see if like anybody's smart enough to pick up on the fact that the only people that can give them this blood that will help them improve their skill set will be women, that there'll be times based off of moon cycles.
There's a whore that you can get blood from. You save an old lady, but because she's old and probably dried up, she doesn't give you blood, but she does give you sedatives, which is another thing I wanted to talk about, but I won't because I don't understand why the sedatives are that important and why an old lady is just giving you pills to take naps. Because you should just take naps when you're tired. You shouldn't have to rely on narcotics to provide you that rest and relaxation. But hey, who am I to judge? No one.
But what I was trying to get at was it's not overtly a thing, because if it was, they would have made a much bigger play about that shortly after the game released, to be like, oh, by the way, we did this. And see, look, we told you this game would be successful and everyone would like it. And oh, by the way, it's ridiculously filled with female themes, and nobody threw up a big stink about it because they just wanted to beat it because it was so good, you know? And you don't have From Software saying that. So I don't think that it was, like, a purposeful
thing. I just think it's very interesting that if you develop a game that has so much going for it, both negatively and positively, because, I mean, these games, I don't know. I can't say that I feel like these games feel broken, because there's an intended purpose for why they operate the way that they do. And I mean, that seems to be FromSoftware's thing. Like, they've understand that that's the type of game that they make. They know that there are people out there who want to subject themselves to that type of
people style like of game. A challenge. And that's one Absolutely. Thing that a big chunk of the gaming community has said has been missing for a while is a really good challenge. Okay. Like, the Uncharted games are great. They're not necessarily a challenging game.
Well, the main story of Uncharted, I would say no. It's very linear. They teach you everything that you need to know, and then it's just really a matter of you surveying.
Rinse and repeat.
Understanding how the baddies are going to come out and learning how to critically path with the least amount of resistance and failure. But then you get into the multiplayer aspect, and then you can't really properly, and I'm using air quotes when I say that because I'm sure there's some mathematician out there who could actually kind of probably figure this out, but math goods I not do, so I'm not going to try. But
yeah, but multiplayer is a completely different guy. I'm talking about on this story.
You've got a random variable because you don't know
what the human is going to do on the other side. Correct.
Exactly.
But what I'm saying is that for most games, like for the storyline for Uncharted, it is not a challenging game. You typically have between 3 and 5 levels that have new mechanics and new puzzles that you have to solve that come at you, and then the last levels are various combinations of those puzzles.
We're testing you on all these skills that you should have to get to this point in this game.
Exactly. So that's where the rinse repeat comes in. So if you get them down, it's the only challenge is, okay, what's the order? So I remember the order and then I can knock this out. That's not very challenging. The same thing can be said for FPSs, and that's why you have within the community people who love FPSs and no matter what are always going to play them, and they will always tell you that what they enjoy most is not the story of the FPS, it's the multiplayer. Again, because the challenge comes in on the human factor, not on the story factor. But I feel like games like Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, and Bloodborne are very challenging without a multiplayer. And so I think that that's why they appeal to a specific set of the community.
I agree. So I mean,
that's all I was trying to say.
That's my little spiel about that, because I thought that was probably one of the most interesting reads I've had in quite a while about the narrative of a game that does not obviously promote a direct story for everyone to be like, oh yeah, it's about this and about that. It's really kind of left up to your personal interpretation of what you encountered during your experience.
And I think that that's really interesting. So big ups to From for creating that space and for the internet to fill it in some very interesting ways. Like, if they had that in mind when they created the system, then, you know, double props to From.
My hat is off to you, From Software, because that was genius.
Yep.
Speaking of things that are genius, or in this case were genius and are now not genius, I know that before vacation there had been some buzzes about potentially seeing a game that I have been eagerly awaiting more news about.
So this, I feel like, is one of those situations where everybody wanted the cake to not be a lie. But the cake was a lie.
It's a lie. Damn you, Portal.
The cake is always a fucking lie.
So, I mean, you guys, as our audience and our fans.
If you're listening to our podcast, you know what she's
about. Yeah. Silent Hills. And
the lack thereof.
And the lack of the silence. Well, the definitely lack of silence, because everyone was talking about all these rumors, and then the definite lack of the hills, because it is now obviously confirmed that it has been canceled. And I mean, there was rumors that at first, like, it was going to be delayed, and then somebody offhandedly was at, I think it was Sundance or one of those indie film type things, and Guillermo del Toro was there.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was Sundance or South by Southwest.
I think it was South by Southwest.
One of those.
And somebody had asked him about, you know, if there were any new details about it, and he kind of nonchalantly was like, oh yeah, that thing's not happening, which then Twitter just kind of exploded.
Okay.
Then it imploded. Then it made a sandwich.
I need to talk. So this thing, like, everything that's been going on with Konami, like, let's take a big step back, because everything that's been going on with Konami has just been, like, a really bad K-drama.
It's been a really bad K-drama breakup, and we talked about this, because we had gotten the news that Kojima was leaving Konami, and you led that that brigade of conversation, I think, like, a couple of episodes ago.
And it was like, well, he's not leaving. No, he is leaving. Well, no, the company...
They did all this. I'm like, he might not be leaving. Like, but then they took his name off of all this. I'm like, okay, now that's kind of shady. I'm like, and if you start doing that, and then everyone's asking questions, and they're just being a redirect, then everyone's trying to sweep stuff under the rug. They're trying to wag the dog, and they're trying... Like, people just got too knowledgeable too quick before they were ready to announce stuff. So then they were like...
And it wasn't even that. Like, the stuff that Konami was doing, I feel like it was, like, just a bad Korean drama. Like, you had Kojima saying, oh, no, we're still in the project, and we're going to see Metal Gear Solid through. You had that, like, weird tweet that Kojima sent out, where he's like, and we're out of here, with Snake getting on a plane. And so you're... Basically, that was him saying, like, we're out. They renamed the studio from Kojima Productions to being Konami US. They got rid of basically all of his people. And they were like, oh, no, but the game's still happening. And here's our official thing. And we're still working together. It's all good, guys. Don't worry about it. And so everyone's like, well, what about Silent Hills? And they're like, oh, no, we're committed to the Silent Hill franchise. All that kind of stuff. But then, no, not so much.
So then
I have more, Panda. Okay. Because, right, so all the stuff with Silent Hills goes down, and first the rumor starts swirling, and they're like, no, we're committed to the franchise. It's going to happen. Don't worry about it. Then somebody asks, well, maybe we should hear this from, like, Kojima and stuff, and Kojima's not talking to anybody right now. And I'll tell you right now, what would be mad ballsy is for Kojima to come out on stage at E3 at Sony's media briefing and drop that Kojima Productions is going to make stuff exclusively for PlayStation or Xbox. Pick them. Either one. That would be a get. Like, that would be a massive get. But anyway.
Man, then I'd have to start saving up so I can get my own Xbox One.
Right? Okay. So, then they have all that stuff going around. Then someone talks and catches Guillermo del Toro, and he's like, yeah, that's totally not happening. Like, it just keeps going, and the internet's like, what? And they're like, no. But even after that, for, like, a hot minute, like, for, like, a 12-hour period, Konami's like, no, it's still happening. Don't worry about it. We're all good. Then the following day, they issue the release. They're like, well, no, actually, the game...
God. Like, literally, that Del Toro, I remember that happening because one of our friends from, you know, from our Esh group was all like, I hope Panda doesn't see this. And, of course, the minute my name dropped, I was like, yeah, I saw it, and I'm not believing it. Not yet. I'm like, not until I hear it out of, you know, Kojima's mouth or Del Toro's mouth. And then I saw the whole Del Toro thing, and I was like, shit.
Right.
And then, like, I had a moment of a tear because I was obviously heartbroken. And then the next day came the official cancellation, which just, I lost my shit.
But Konami has lost their shit because shortly right after that, they became delisted.
Ooh, what?
So Konami is, one of two things are happening. They're about to get bought by somebody.
Ooh.
And they're about to get out of the video game business, and they're probably just going to focus on...
Do you know how funny it would be if Kojima went and bought Konami and then pissed all over them?
Well, it would just all be absorbed and become Kojima Productions is what it would be.
Right, and then they
because
went,
right now...
This is back, yay!
Because right now, Kojima... This is how fucked up this whole situation is. Cannot use the name... or create a company named Kojima Productions because Konami actually owns that. That's why they had to pull that logo off of all the posters and things like that.
Wow.
And so he can't even use his own fucking name, the company that he came up with, because the logo for it was artwork from Metal Gear game. So he can't even use that logo that's been so synonymous, the Fox logo, because that was out in one of the games when they created the company. But it's a subsidiary of Konami. So that's why they had to shutter it.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't think that...
Sorry, Kojima, you can't even use your own name, bro.
Right. So, I don't think that Kojima has, like, the money to take Konami, but... Sony does.
Daydream revenge for Kojima, because...
Sony does.
The pole, right up the non-pole hole.
Microsoft does. So, Kojima's not out of the game. Like, we all know that he's not just going to stop making video games. What's going to be very interesting is where... Kojima is going to go. I think, and this is like my speculation, but I think that that's why he's been so quiet about it. Because I think that he's going to work out a deal, and he's going to end up at one of the big houses.
Probably.
And his team is going to end up at one of the big houses.
He would rightly deserve it.
And making exclusives for that platform.
So, I mean, sadly, I mean, for all of you guys out there who were eagerly awaiting Silent Hills, as much as I was...
You ain't getting shit. I hope you already downloaded the PT demo, because that's gone.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Thanks, Ninja.
Hey, you know.
If you were smart enough to keep it on your systems and not delete it, then share in the dream that will probably not happen anytime
soon. You now have a collectible.
That's right, because it's, yeah, exactly.
For anybody who wanted to know how digital collectibles would work, here's your example. This shall never be on the market again.
I think the other thing that really kind of upsets me about this is, I mean, for someone who understands the Silent Hill, you know, narrative and understands, like, why they chose certain people to do certain things, you know, like having Norman Reedus on board to be your silent or minimal talking, like Ryan Gosling drive protagonist was going to be so amazing.
Yep.
And, like, and I know that the reason...
And the technology that they were putting behind it. Like, I was not going to play the game, but I will tell you, I was very impressed with the level of things that were going on in that teaser. Playable teaser. Yeah, I was really impressed. And I was like, if these are elements of things that are going to be in this game, like, just the whole scope of needing to work with the global community to solve some of the puzzles because of things being said in other languages or really needing to get certain sequences down. I
mean, that would have made the game excruciatingly heady and heavy.
But that's what they wanted to create. And that was so ambitious.
At the same time, you know, a game that, I mean, I don't want to go into that whole argument of, you know, how many hours constitutes a good game, because we could talk that until we're both blue in the face and it doesn't really answer the question. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for people who really want to get through this narrative, you know, there are people who cannot sit there and rely on, you know, the guises of other people. And I mean, there are some people who are purists and don't even like to use strategy guides or even really talk about what they're trying. So, I mean, I feel like some people would get caught up and would get stalled out on
but
the game.
But I think that those are people who probably weren't interested in this type of game to begin with.
I just wanted to see what else they were going to possibly do with the narrative.
Well, now you're not going to get it. Because it's dead. It died.
And I mean, like I said, the whole Norman Reedus thing is probably what kills me the most, because apparently the reason why at first they were making the mention that Norman Reedus wasn't going to be involved any further is, for one, they had a contract out with him for a certain period of time, and it lapsed while all this shit was going down. So, and I think because of all that, he decided that he wasn't going to renew it. So that's why he was going to be stepping back from this.
Because he knew the project wasn't going to happen because they didn't renew it. Because I'm sure that he was aware of all this infighting between Kojima's team and the Konami team. Aware.
You're absolutely
you
right.
You know that those meetings must have been really fucking awkward. And probably mostly in a language that you didn't understand. And so you probably had, like, this awkward translator who was trying to translate in the nicest way possible the horrible, horrible things that the teams were saying to each other.
I mean, it's
no drama.
I mean, it's really kind of sad because, for one, you know, like, Resident Evil was making a great comeback. But, I mean, because, you know, a lot of people were not all that thrilled with 5. People don't like to acknowledge 6, and I clearly understand why that is the case.
Well, and as we were talking about, you know, really great revivals of the genre, you know, you're just coming off the heels of Evil Within.
Yep. Which has another downloadable DLC out there that is now going to add even more to the story, which I think is phenomenal.
You've got the announcement and the revitalization of the Fatal Frame franchise coming back. You have...
To the Wii U. It's going to be...
It's coming back, okay? All right?
It's going to be great. I don't have a Wii U, so I can't play it.
Well, you just will have to come over to my place then, won't you?
But then you'll be scared when there are ghosts that I have to...
No, I'll just go in the other room.
But I don't want to be by myself.
I'll leave the dog with you. You'll be fine. I'll leave the dog with you. You'll be fine.
She'll get scared, and then I'll feel bad for scaring your dog.
She probably will hide under the blanket. Yeah. But you have that coming back. And then you had a decent Resident Evil game. And now you were going to cap it off with the rebirth of the Silent Hill franchise with this thing that looked
amazing.
Really amazing. And so you there was a lot of hope for the genre, and now I don't know where exactly all that hope goes. Like, I still think that Fatal Frame is going to be something to look forward to, but you're right, it's coming out on a platform that right now has a much smaller piece of the market in the U.S., Northern America, than the rest of the world. So it's not necessarily going to get played by a lot of people. Like, Fatal Frame is not going to move Wii U units for Nintendo.
What's going to happen is, so once again, I'm so happy to see that Fatal Frame is getting another look at. Because, I played Fatal Frame back in the day, and I got through the first game, and then I played the third. I didn't play Crimson Butterfly because I thought the whole dynamic of always having somebody with you.
I know, we've talked about this.
Yeah. I felt like it took away from the horror. But then I went back and actually watched a Let's Play of it, and I actually felt like it was a pretty strong game for what they were trying to do then. And I feel like it's going to get this resurgence of the genre. And, there's even a Fatal Frame that never made it over here in America. So there's a fourth one that's completely Japanese only that I've also seen a playthrough of. And I feel like that actually enriches what happens in 1 and 3, because 1 and 3 are far more tied than 2 to the rest of the franchise. And I'd love to see them try to work out getting that over here, because I feel like this Fatal Frame that's coming to the Wii U, if it's an original, then, you're going to have a whole bunch of people who haven't had any exposure to any of the other games, so they're not going to have an idea as to what is going on in that narrative. And, and it's rich, and and I love that we're going to get, survival horror game that is not necessarily traditional Western horror, but we're going to look at, what really makes things scary on a totally different side of the world. Like, I think it's such an interesting thing to pick apart and try to understand and want to try to replicate in your own way, which is why I think, going on a tangent, why The Ring was such a big hit here. And, I will find a way to play that. But we've had some other really good survival horror games come out. Outlast was simply amazing.
Yeah, Outlast was good.
Granted, once again, that's more escapist horror than survival horror for me, but that's fine. And then we had that game I talked about. I think it was Skelter or Heltor. I talked about that like a couple of weeks ago, where you are in an abandoned, pretty much like a facility, and you've been drugged up and you have to take so much medication, or you start having these mental breakdowns, and then eventually something is chasing you, but you can never rightly know if it's your mind playing tricks on you or if there is actually something aggressively pursuing you. Mm-hmm. But that's PC only, or at least it was when I was dicking around with it. And we might actually see that hit like a PSN or an Xbox Live or something like that in the future, which would be pretty cool. So, we have enough people trying to figure out what the next new scary thing is. And I even saw some notice of some interactive augmented reality things or apps that pretty much haunt your phone or make things happen out of your control. So, they're trying to play with other ways to make horror more immersive for a player and stuff, which I think is amazing. And I'd love to see more of that happen. I'd also want to say that I'd love to see some more horror RPGs, because I've been watching a whole lot of Let's Plays of those. And I didn't realize just how scary RPGs could be. And those have been pretty good. I might actually talk about those next week, but anyway, I'm sad to hear Silent Hills has run its course way before it even came to term. It leaves a hole in my heart in the way that when Lamb Chop's Play Along back in the 90s did. And that hurt me. And you clearly know that, because I cried weeks when that
Lamb Chop's is the shit.
Hell yeah. Hush Puppy, Charlie Horse, come on. Yeah, I'm dating myself.
It's
okay. Whatever.
It's all right. You got to date yourself sometimes. No, the whole space and spec is really kind of weird. And the whole reboot of a bunch of genres, let's for a hot second, I don't even know if we're going to get to anime today, but let's for like a hot second. Well, this is what happens when you're gone for a week and like everything happens in the genre. I'm like, I have nobody to talk about with this right now. And it's really kind of bugging me.
I want to talk to her, but I know she's getting a massage right now.
So I can't. Also, I think we've got a little bit of time, so I think we could talk some anime. I know that you've been, like, watching some stuff.
I have been. I've been catching up on a lot of series that I've already watched, like, a season or two seasons of. A lot of things that I've been watching have been another season of something I've already been established to be watching. So the only thing new that I've watched lately is this anime called Punchline. It is part of I'm so glad you. I didn't even have to get to the punchline before you found it funny, but
because I've watched some of it. It's
oh good,
yeah,
good.
I gotta say, I mentioned it early on. The summer lineup of anime is
amazingly funny. Like they're taking all the stops out in terms of their comedy, and they're really pushing.
They like swung for the fences on this.
They
did,
and it's working. And it doesn't normally, but it is working right now, which is great. So essentially, here's your deal. You've got this kid named Yuta, and he is the main protagonist. And I think there's actually a game either in development or already has happened with this. And his soul gets separated from his body because one day he's on the bus and the bus gets hijacked by these bad guys. And also conveniently, there's a superhero lady who shows up to try to kick their butts and stuff like that.
And isn't she named after like an orange soda or something?
She's like her name is like a, like Orange Crush or something like that. Like it's
yeah,
definitely
she's named
based
like
off
a soda,
of,
like a drink.
Yeah.
She's
and like
tangerine,
she does all the girl poses, and she does all the. I think her name's Strange Juice, actually.
There you go. So, like it's just, yeah.
And she's like bright and orange, and she's got this big puffy uniform, and like she can seriously fight, and like she's really good. Like it's not even like a cheesy like you know, pretty soldier or like Senshi type of deal. Like she's a legit superhero. Like I kind of felt like her team kind of reminded me a little bit of like the Bird of Prey team, because she had like, you know, the hacker type who was like doing computer stuff. She had somebody who had like artillery who was in a car following them, and like they had like an established team. But anyway, so Yuta's on this bus, it gets hijacked, Strange Juice shows up to try to help everything, shit kind of gets crazy, she takes out most of the people on the bad guys on the bus, except for this one guy who pretty much has her, but in the commotion, Yuta gets knocked to the ground and happens to look up her skirt. And
Just happens
to look up her skirt, which obviously leads to like a bloody nose, but it doesn't stop there. All of a sudden, he starts kind of going like Dead Man Wonderland, like red hair, and like starts developing these super abilities and begins to be kind of like a juggernaut, and kind of takes the mastermind guy and kind of flings him out of the bus. And that kind of ends the encounter. And, after that, he comes to in what looks like his apartment, but isn't. And he is greeted by this cat spirit. And he's just like, I don't even know why I see you. I'm just going to get out of here. And then he realizes he doesn't have any legs. And he has that ghost wisp bottom like Casper has, where he has no feet.
Yep.
And the cat's like, yeah, well, I'm like, you're kind of stuck here because another spirit's kind of in your body. But you're not really dead, though, so you're not really a ghost. But we have to get you back in your body soon, because eventually, if we don't, you're going to die. And he's just like, I don't even understand why this is like a problem. And he's just like, well, see, you're not a normal human being. And this is not the first time that something like this has happened. You see, you're not supposed to look at or, you know, there's this line for men where they can see certain things. And yes, they get aroused and stuff. And that's kind of normal. But for you, just even looking at panties brings you to that level of arousement. And he's like, and most guys will like digress and come down and they'll be fine. But you stay there. And when you're at that peak, you are at your finest physically. Like you have all this strength. You have all this speed.
His power level's over 9,000.
It is. But the cat's like, but if you happen to stay that stimulated or get overstimulated, you cause pretty much several atomic bombs to hit the world and the world ends. And he's like, you can't be serious. And he's like, I'm dead serious. He's like, this, you know, and he's just like, just, you'll see, but try very hard not to do that. And, like, he's trying to figure out how to, like, float and stuff, because apparently it's not, like, a very natural thing to learn how to be like a ghost.
I would imagine not. I would imagine there's a learning curve.
There is, and they
from
show
being
it
corporeal in, to not.
Which I appreciate that they actually showed that he didn't know how to move, and it took him a bit, and he struggles in the first episode how to do it, and he actually ends up seeing some more panties, and the whole world blows up. But he has the ability to go back in time, which they haven't fully...
It's really helpful that he has that ability. Yeah. And no, they haven't explained yet why he also has the ability to, after he destroys basically the known world, to go back in time to a point where he didn't and try to not do that.
It's like a sick joke.
It's like a bad Groundhog's Day.
It is. It's a bad joke mixed with Groundhog Day without Bill
Murray.
Which is kind of sad, because that would be amazing if he was in it, but that's fine that he's not. But anyway, so you find out from the first two episodes or so that the apartment complex that he lives in primarily has a lot of women in it. Also has a very, very different stereotypes of women that you would find, like, in an H game or a dating sim, per se. And the four girls he interacts with the most, and by that I mean, like, runs into them, not necessarily interacts, like, on a conversation level, are all part of this Supergirl fighting team who works with Strange Juice. And, like, I think eventually, because, like I said, I'm only four episodes in so far, I think eventually he's going to start piecing that together, and he's going to try to find a way to work with them, because maybe by working with them, they can help him get his body back. Because I don't think at this point I have figured out what or who is in his body. And, like, I mean, I just like what they're doing with this. And, like, he has to sit there and try to navigate through this building and not catch girls, you know, half naked or jumping up and down where he can see panties, because at any moment, the world could end because he saw somebody's thong.
I mean, the world could kind of end. You see the wrong thong, the world does kind of end for you for, like, a moment.
Yeah, but not for the whole entire world.
Not for the whole planet. That's a bit much.
It's a pretty extreme. The animation style kind of reminds me a little bit of, and I'm going to butcher this name because I often do, Gurren Lagann, sort of, and a little bit
You nailed it.
And I would also say it probably airs a little bit also on the side of, what was that one called? Because I can't remember what the name of it was, but it had the boy who was, like, angry, and there was an alien who hit him with his guitar, and then he would turn into a monster. I can't remember what that anime was called. Furikuri, I think? Yeah, that one. It has that kind of animation style, very fast-paced action. And I'm sure there's a lot more story to go on, but like I said, I'm only four episodes in. I think there's about six in rotation right now. So if you're in the mood for some pretty much fan servicey humor with more story than you would expect, then Punchline is definitely up your alley and up your dress, so to speak.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah,
I give you points.
Because I'm a pervert.
Well, I'm going to bring the mood down, you pervert. And this is less perverted, except in, like, the averse perversion kind of way. So I've been watching a series, I actually marathoned the whole thing on Funimation, called Shiki, because I was looking for a series that I hadn't watched before. And frankly, I was looking for something a little bit dark, because I've been watching a lot of Saccharin.
I give you a lot of credit for Shiki, because I'm on episode 8 in that, and I've had to take some serious breaks.
I marathoned the whole thing, and I gotta tell you, it gets harder. It really does. But not like in a ooh cringe way. Like, it wasn't hard in, like, the another where I had to take a break from another for, like, a week before I could finish it after I made my prediction on who the another was, and you called bullshit on it, and then I ended up being right. But Shiki is basically set in this very small town called Sotoba, and it's a rural town that's outside of a big city, and it's surrounded by these trees, this forest.
Death trees.
Yeah, basically, these trees are used to make great coffins and gravestones by many of the cities around. So everyone that lives in this tiny village town typically are farmers, primarily for taking down these trees and lumber to then sell and ship off to the big cities for that purpose. So there's a priest in the town who's written a bunch of novels and wrote an essay about living in the town basically surrounded by death, which is noticed by a few people, including the Kirishiki family, who decides to move in. And they move in at night, which is flag number one.
Right.
And they move into basically the only European, meaning English, style built house in the entire village area.
It's like set up on this hilltop, so it kind of looks down at the village.
And it basically looks like a warped Cinderella's castle from Disney.
Okay.
All right. So they move in under the cover of night. You don't see them for a while. And there are various members in the village who have their own deal. The main protagonist of the series is named Natsuno Yuki. And he hates it when people call him by his first name. He hates the town. Basically, his parents were hippies, and they are counterculture everything. So they decided to move away from the big city, to move to a village where they didn't have to lock doors. They denounced the whole idea of marriage, so they never married. So his parents have different names, which everyone in the village is like, I don't understand that, because they're married, right? They're a family, because you can't have a kid without a family. So he's got all these chips on his shoulder about his parents basically being so nonconformist. And the only thing that he's focused on is not getting close to anybody in the town, to studying his ass off so he can pass all of his exams for college,
so
basically,
get
the fuck out of this village and far away from his parents. Then you have some other people that absolutely love the village life, and there's no other place that they can imagine living. And you have the one girl who kicks off the whole series, Megumi, who just desperately wants to be a fashion plate and wants to be out of the village because nobody understands that she would, or why she would, dress up and use a parasol to go to the store, where it's just like,
like, she has, she has dreams of, like, being an idol and being recognized.
She does.
And no one in this village really understands what any
or
of that
gets
is about.
It. And so, of course, she hates everybody except for Yuki, who she basically has a one-sided love for and is trying
to
express it.
Well, because he's probably the hottest dude in the village, and she probably knows.
And he came from the big city.
And he wants to get the fuck out. So she's like, oh, if I love him, maybe I can get out, because he wants to get out.
Exactly.
And we can be together, and life's going to be great.
Because they've never talked and all that kind of stuff. But like I said, I was looking for a darker anime, and Shiki is definitely it.
Oh, it is.
So everyone's making some comments about the Kirishikis because they've come out on some nightly strolls for a couple of evenings and have met some people. And right off the bat, as soon as you look at them, you realize that something's off, because their eyes are completely drawn differently than everybody else in the series to let you know, hey, there's something abnormal about these people.
Right.
So that's clue one. If eyes are different, something's fucked up. Because their eyes are fully, fully drawn in. So there's no white of their eyes.
Right.
And so you meet two of them while they're out, and supposedly the owners, the mother and the father, because there's a daughter and a caretaker in the family. And so the father and the mother are out strolling around meeting people and basically trying to get invited to come back and meet different people. Flag number two goes up. And are very, very, very happy when people verbally say that, yes, they can swing by anytime. So, of course, my vampire thing goes off. I'm like, oh, all right. They moved in under the cover at night. They're trying to get people to invite them into their house. They get really excited when they get the invitation. Obviously, they're vampires. So, basically, this town is about to get laid to waste.
Yep.
And that's basically what happens in Shiki. And how it happens is very weird. So people
just
start...
They don't show basic signs of being attacked. Like, it doesn't... Like, in the first few episodes when Megumi gets her upcomings for being a little too loud and a little too rowdy and wanting to run away. Because that's what kind of happens when
and
she
being
gets
a douche.
And kind of being a douche to that one girl who just honestly wants to be
Kaori,
her
who's just trying to be your friend.
But when they find her, because for once she goes missing for quite a while, and they just presume that she fell in the woods somewhere.
Yep.
And they do a big search, and they find her, and she's on death's door.
She's catatonic for almost.
And she's so weak, and they couldn't figure out exactly what it was. And then, like, oh, if she just rests, she'll be fine. But she ended up going into cardiac arrest and dying. So they thought she had had a heart attack. But then they kind of find out that these were all big signs of this type of anemia, like this extreme acute anemia.
Tachyroma something.
Yeah, and they're just like, it's kind of weird because usually, like, that's, like, severe internal bleeding, but there was no sign of any type of bruising to indicate that. And she had no punctures anywhere either denoting any type of, you know, laceration or puncture or anything like that.
That they could see because her parents didn't let an autopsy be done because, again, they're rural people. And the doctor was, like, beating himself up about it when she died. But he proceeds to beat himself up even more when more people die until he crosses the line where he goes insane. And I'm spoiling the shit out of it, so just be prepared. More people die, more people die. He starts going to the registry for the city and be like, can I get a, like, count of how many people have actually freaking died in our county? Because I know it's pretty high. And then they come back and like, yeah, like 21 people have died. So, wait, is this an epidemic? So, like, he and the government guy and the priest sit down. They're trying to figure out what's going on. But some people start coming back. And not in overt ways. Yeah, and they're a little hungry.
They're zombie vampires.
They're basically zombie vampires. Okigari is what they call them in the series until the priest names them Shiki. But basically, they start eating their family members. Now, here's the thing. Not everybody who is sucked bone dry by these vampire zombies rise up. Which is basically what they call it. Not everybody comes back. So there's got to be something that goes on physically after.
There's like a process that does that.
That genetically some people have it and they turn to Shiki and they rise and other people don't. So it's basically a crapshoot to see whether or not people rise up. So like this one woman ended up wiping out her whole family, her husband, her mother-in-law, her father-in-law, her own child. None of them rise up. So then she starts having some, you know, feelings about maybe not doing that would have been a good thing.
You know what? Maybe I should stop murdering people.
That'd on the hopes that maybe one of them would live. Then there are some other people who are, like, grateful that they've died and become
Shiki.
Zombie Shiki. And as such, embrace it and just want to fucking kill everybody. So the doctor tries to figure out what's going on. And Natsuno, after the only friend that he reluctantly makes in the town, dies, decides that, okay, now he's going to get invested and figure it out. He's one of the first people to figure out that they're basically living dead, that have risen up. And, he's going to try and put a stop to it. He's not exactly sure how. He works with these two kids, Kaori, who is Megumi's friend, and Kaori's brother, Akiro, trying to figure this all out. But not before Natsuno's friend who died, Tori, comes back because he's tasked with turning Natsuno because the zombie vampires have figured out that Natsuo is on to him. They've also figured out that the doctor is kind of onto him, so they need to take him out because their goal is to basically wipe out this village and turn this entire village that's basically separated from the outside world into a haven for
Shiki.
Zombie vampires.
Oh, for nice. Shiki.
Yeah. That's their goal, so they're trying to take everybody out. And Natsuo does eventually get turned and disappears. Like, his father is, like, fighting everybody who's, like, trying to put up talismans and stuff in Natsuo's room to protect him, because he's like, it's superstitious and stupid bullshit religion, and we don't buy into that stuff. So he constantly keeps ripping down, like, all these crosses and talismans, which in fact do work against the Shiki, because they're terrified of organized religion and stuff, so it would have kept them out of his room, so his son wouldn't have died, but he didn't listen.
Of course, because parents sometimes.
Yeah, so his son dies and his wife's being eaten at the same time.
Oh, that's nice.
So she writes a note because she's hypnotized to leave, and basically her note is like, yeah, so I noticed that Natsuno died, I can't take it living here anymore, so I'm leaving. And he's like, wait, what? Natsuo is fine. And he goes into his room. No, he's dead. So he, like, loses it, has a mental breakdown, and instead of using the funeral home, which is basically just a staging area to see who turns into Shiki, who doesn't, that right. the Kirishiki's made, sends his son off to be buried in the city. So you don't know for a while whether or not Natsuno has turned, but he does, and he comes back right as the doctor's wife, Ozaki, ends up dying. And he knows that she's dying, and so he needs to perform some experiments to figure out how they can take care of Shiki. So since she's died, he puts her on ice, closes up the hospital to see if she'll turn. She does turn, so then he proceeds to basically torture her to death, trying to figure out how he can kill Shiki. This is his wife.
Right.
So, and you get to watch him, like, cut her open with a scalpel, start cutting open veins to see if they heal each other. He injects her with all kinds of acids and poisons, and like she's duct taped shut so she can't say anything. She's just screaming, and so she's basically melting from the inside out and then repairing herself, which I would imagine is kind of painful.
Till he finally, just like, I'm healed,
until he finally ends up with a, well, let me see if I put a stake through her heart, if that kills her. And he videotapes the whole thing, and sure enough, stake through the heart takes care of the job. So his priest friend comes over. He's like, hey, I got to talk to you because I have some thoughts about what's going on. He's like, yeah, great. Come into the operating room because I'm operating room. He's covered in blood. The room's covered in blood. The priest comes in and looks at him like, what the fuck did you do to your wife? And he's like, well, I figured it out. This is how I'm going to hunt the Shiki. And he's like, no. And turns around and just walks out. So that's when the priest and the doctor no longer get along. And the priest decides...
it took the brutal murder of his Shiki
of his Shiki wife. So she was already dead. So he just re-killed her.
So he can't be charged for her death because she's dead, right? Double jeopardy and all that.
And so one of the Kirishikis decide that they're going to turn the doctor, and that's how they're going to bring him over to the side. Well... Natsuno hypnotizes the doctor and sucks his blood, so basically he's his puppet.
Okay.
Before the Kirishikis have a chance to, but they don't know that. So he basically sets up this Kirishiki chick by convincing her that he's under her power or whatever to go out to this festival that's there. And it's like, oh, we don't have to go anywhere near the shrine because that would really hurt her. It's like, we'll just walk around. You can see people. And here, I'm going to bandage up your hand so the people understand the reason that I'm with you is because I just treated you for, like, cutting your hand when you were cleaning a potato. And she's like, oh, that's brilliant. And I'll tell people all this story because I want to be out and about because she just wants to be, like, of the town. So they're out, they're out, and she's like, well, I'll get a little closer to the shrine because I want to see the dance that you guys are going to do because they're getting ready to do a Kagura dance. Okay. And so they're like talking with everybody, and he finally drops a bombshell, and she's like, well, you know, you should probably grab a hold of her because she's the one who killed Megumi because she's a Okigari, and I can prove it. And everyone's like, what? And she's like, no, I command you to take me away. And he's like, yeah, actually, no, you can't do that, though. So, like, grab a hold of her because I'm about to show you this shit. And so basically, like, he proves in front of the entire town that she's Okigari, and she, like, whips her fangs out because she tries to bite someone. And basically this, like, ridiculous, like, was a former, like, sumo wrestler, but, like, is ridiculously powerful and strong, beefy guy, like, grabs her by the hand and is like, are you kidding me? Like, they're Okigari, they're the things that killed my son, and blah, 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 and like, yep. Pretty much. I'm like, all right, well, then we're about to do this. So they stake her through the heart on the stage that they were going to do the Kagura dance, and then the entire town is like, well, what are we going to do? And so... the doctor, I'm using air quotes here, is like, we gotta hunt them all. So I made stakes for you guys. You're gonna make stakes for yourselves out of our trees. I know that they're hiding in the pipeline. They're hiding at the Kirishikis. And they're hiding probably at the temple. So we're just gonna go there and we're gonna kill them all.
Oh my.
And we're gonna block off the road so the outside people can't get in. Because obviously we don't want them seeing all these bodies. Because we're just gonna throw them in this pit. But
we're going martial law up in this bitch.
And then, like, literally the last 10 episodes is just nothing but the hunt of, like, these regular townsfolk, like, killing these people. There's, like, one episode where they start singing, like, old Negro hymns, but they're not Negroes, as they're, like, taking these bodies, like, out of holes that they've staked and cutting them up and putting them on the back of trucks and taking the trucks to the town and drop them in the hellhole.
You seem very enthusiastic about the butchering of a bunch of
Well, they're already dead, so they're not people, but they still had, like, their souls, so it wasn't like they were, like, zombies with, like, no brains and no feelings. Like, well, they did.
Isn't that a different type of Shiki, though? Because aren't there some people who come back and still, like, maintain their human traits, like being able to walk in the day?
Yes, and, like, there's four of them, and Natsuno is one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, but basically this townsfolk pool of, like, simple fucking people just lays waste
The
Shiki.
The series was basically like a regular anime until those last four episodes, and then it decided to pull School Days.
Yep.
And just, fuck your shit.
Yep, basically, like, episode 11, they were like, by the way, the rest of this is about to be brutal, and just, sorry. And so I was like, I was looking for dark, but this is a bit much. So it wasn't another dark in that it was really cerebral and the violence was, like, super gory. Because the violence wasn't super gory. Like, you had people...
This anime came out, I think, its initial run was back in 2010. So I'm sure the anime style isn't nearly as advanced as another was.
Nope. But I will tell you this. Megumi does get her comeuppance because she basically is, like, making a break for the big city. And she gets trampled basically, like, by a tractor. And they pin her arm with one tractor. And then they take another one and roll it over her head.
Oh, nice.
Before they stake her.
Well, they gotta make sure she's dead.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure the moment that you made her head explode under the weight of that tractor, like, did it. But they're like, for good measure, let's make sure we'll just stake her heart. Just, I'm like, really? 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 I mean, I didn't like that bitch, but...
But I mean, going back to, like, you know, your talk of, like, gruesome and violence in anime, like, Parasite the Maxim...
Parasite was definitely much more gruesome overall.
But I'm just saying, like, that one encounter, like, with Goto.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Goto.
And, like, he's sitting there trying to regenerate, and, like, he's just this big bloody mess, and, like, they have that big question about whether or not, because he's fighting so hard to try to exist, if he has the right to exist.
Yep.
And then, you know, they're just trying to, like, do we let him or do we not let him? And he goes through that whole thing, and then he just kind of, you know, ends it by, like, smashing the heart with, like, the blunt frickin' blade.
Yep.
Like, that was pretty grotesque within itself. So, I mean, but...
Yeah, there's one point where this one woman, first she loses her daughter, she doesn't rise up, and then her good-for-nothing... father-in-law, who basically was really verbally abusive. Like, he dies, but he actually comes back, and her son ends up getting sick. And so when she realizes that Okigari are a thing, she realizes that, oh, it's that son of a bitch stepfather that probably came back and took my child and took my son. So when her son gets sick, she's like, I'm going to keep you safe. And she holds up, basically, with her son in the bathroom. Like, she locks the door. They never leave the room to eat. They never leave the room to do anything other than be in the bathtub. So eventually, after like a week, her son fucking dies. But she stays in the bathroom until his body completely decomposes and liquefies. At one point, she's petting his head and his entire fucking skin just comes like off his scalp. And she goes, oh no, Shota-kun. And I'm like, what? No! What is wrong with you?
That's
He's
gross.
Dead! Get out of the bathroom! Like, stop touching him! Stop touching him!
Okay, ugh. Okay, right? Stop. You're gonna make me sick. Stop.
It's, like,
stop.
Disgusting. And she walks out, she's, like, in a haze, and she goes to see her friend, who she used to work at their cafe down the hill, and she's just like, yeah, Shota-kun liquefied in the bathroom. Can you open the door? Can you open the door? And it's, like, just beating her head against the door, like, not even, like, a human being, like, nodding, so her face starts bleeding, and her friend opens the door, she's like, yeah, I can bring you in. It's all good. Her mother passed away in turn, but didn't realize that she, like, would attack people until her daughter cuts her hand. And she's like, oh my God, I can't do this. Like, I promise I'll never attack. Just don't let me out. Don't let people see me. I'll never attack anybody, but I can't do this. And so she lets her in and she sees the mom and she's like, just pretend that you didn't see that. She's like, wait, huh? And she remembers that the girl told her that her mom died. She's like, oh, she died, but she came back. That's nice for you. And she's like, you need to take a bath because you kind of smell disgusting.
You kind of smell like a liquefied person.
It's like horrible. You get through the whole thing. Like, it's just a nasty bloodbath. The village basically catches on fire. So everybody has to disperse. Almost all of the bad people die. But, like, in horrible, horrible ways. Like, people start killing people just because they got bit. And they're like, no, the doctor said that they have to drain us completely before we turn. I'm fine. I can just come back to... You remember, he said that. And like, I'm not sure. So I'm going to stab you through the trachea just to be safe. Because if you're one of them, that's how you'd lie and get us. So they're, like, killing humans as well as, like, Shiki. And it just is, like, an entire study on how the worst of humanity comes through by based off of fear. Because yes. They just, like, get brutal. And like, they're popping people's heads, and, like, they're like, well, if we really want to be sure, we should probably just take them out into the sunlight, because we know that that kills them. It takes a little while to do it, but we're out of stakes, so we'll have to kill them that way. So they arrange a bunch of people in a semicircle and around trees and tie them up and wait for the sun to come up. And so this one guy who basically moved to the town because his kids died in a car accident and he wanted to start over, who couldn't physically kill anybody because he's like, I just don't believe in this. Like, they're writhing in pain and screaming and their skin is, like, slowly melting because it's not insta-death like most vampires in the sun. It takes a good while. So he just, like, starts losing it because of all these people, like, crying and begging for mercy, that he finally takes a big fucking pipe and just starts going around and stabbing them all through the heart.
Well.
To give them mercy. So he kills, like, 17 of them. And then goes back to his wife, who's like, are you okay? He's like, I'm okay now. I'm okay now. I'm okay now. And, like, starts crying by their corpses. I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to watch Sailor Moon right now for a hot minute because I just need to do that. So right. It's really dark. It's very fucked up, but it's very well done. So if you like dark anime, Shiki is absolutely, like, it's on the list. Like, I would watch Future Diary, then another, then Shiki, then I would watch My Little Pony.
Now, would you really put Future Diary before another? Are you going in terms of less scary to more scary? I don't understand the line.
So for me, where I'm going is on the psychotic scale. Okay. I would put Future Diary at the top of the psychotic scale.
Yes.
Then I would put another.
Yes.
And then I would put Shiki.
Okay. All right.
Not then. For scary to less scary, because that starts with another, goes to Shiki, goes to Future Diary.
Oh, man. Wait until they actually do the proper version of Corpse Party. That will be a series that if you can get through one, I will have to commend you and clap for you, because... I watched a playthrough of the games and would freak the fuck out.
Well, anyway, we'll see how that goes.
That's here or there.
So that's what I got. That's what we got. That's the show this week. Make sure that you check us out on all the channels that we're on. Hit up our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. If we're talking about our indies, our podcast is there. You can also check out our live coverage of events that we go to, because we got E3 and BFIG right around the corner, guys. You can check out all the stuff that we write about on the main site, egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. If it's AAA, we're probably posting it there, so make sure that you subscribe. The moment we put out new articles, you'll get notified. Our podcasts go out typically on Tuesdays. We try to make them Mondays, but let's be real, they're usually up by Tuesday morning for your drive through. So whether you're in iTunes on your desktop or on the podcast application on your iOS device, search for Electric Sisterhood, the Eshcast, and subscribe. The moment we put out the new episodes, they'll be on your digital devices for your oral pleasure. See? For your ears. Then follow that up with some of the great shows that the rest of the team is creating. If you like indie stuff, whether it's music, movies, theater, freaking J-pop, K-pop, all that stuff, then you definitely want to check out No Borders, No Race, held down by our homeboy KBD. New episodes roll on Tuesdays, but it's really a phenomenal show. On Wednesdays, if you're looking for the perfect beats for your workout playlist, or just the stuff to make you wiggle, because everybody's got to wiggle a little bit, then you definitely want to check out Geek Aggro, put together by a homeboy, Deuces Wild. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues,
he's got issues,
y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues Program. He does recaps of all kinds of shows, including one of our favorite, Game of Thrones. So if you want to be part of that, then you want to make sure that you're getting down with the Issues Guys. And soon to be coming back live, Just Join the Family, Structure Network is on board. They will be live this summer. It's going to be amazing. Games, comics, sports, music. Just, if it's nerdy, Structure Network is going to have it. So we're so happy to have them be part of the family. Yay! It's rolling deep. And we are mad across social. Structure's on Twitch. They're on YouTube. Obviously, Issues Guys on YouTube. We are on social as well. You can interact with us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Land of Esh. You can hit us up on our Twitter, @ESH News. We're sharing all kinds of stuff, the stuff that we're enjoying reading, that's thought-provoking, that we just think is cool, or we just think is bullshit. We're putting it out so for your consumption and to get your thoughts about it. So interact with us, tweet at us, tweet about us, get on the Facebook, like our page, ask us questions, share stuff that you think is interesting. And if there's something you think we should do a podcast about, let us know on our Facebook page. And who knows, we might do a whole podcast just on that topic. You never know. So with that, I'm going to turn to my sister and say, hey, yo, sis.
Yes.
What should you dig in this week?
Games.
Oh, well, that was awesome.
It's like pretty simple games. Yeah. I like games. And fucking Downton Abbey. Welcome to Downton Abbey, bitch. What shit are you digging this week?
I am digging the Harmony remote from Logitech because that just makes life easy when I can just program activity and be like, watch Apple TV, and it puts it on the right input, and it turns on my soundbar, and it turns on my Apple TV, and lets me control very simply without 6 remotes, 5 devices. And the fact that it can control my Wii is also pretty damn awesome. So I'm in love with the Harmony remote. Thank you, Logitech. So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
Peace.